Welcome to episode 217 of Redboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is NYRA's very own Sarah L. Bodwe. Me and Sarah go over three races from this past Saturday at Aqueduct. Those races were 6, 9, and 10, and some angles that we talk about. Why it's important to look back at all favorites in each race to see if we can find bigger holes than when we were first starting out handicapping, and also what is the ROI of the other Chad Brown runner in all races? This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth, we go back and forth. And it ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth, won't do this no more. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's edition of Red Bull Rewind, the first podcast of two. If you listen to NYRA, if you've been watching NYRA Racing, then you have absolutely been seeing and hearing the wonderful analysis and notes of Sarah L. Bodwe. Sarah, how are you?
Doing great. Excited to be back on the podcast after a big weekend at Aqueduct, arguably the biggest one that we have to offer throughout the extended period of time that we'll be there, and some great racing and some upsets as well that we were treated to.
And that's such a big deal when we talk about upsets, and you know, everyone is always looking for that next $10, $20, $30 horse, and they want to know how we can find them and stuff like that. And I've always told people, the more you look for value, you'll miss out on more favorites, but you should hopefully be rewarded longer in time. I think what hurts a lot of gamblers in general is they want to find the four $20 horses in back-to-back races, or just not waste their time when they go 1-for-8 on a day, yet still realize they've made money for the day if they just bet $2, you know, across the board, $2 to win every race.
Right. I think we get so focused on finding those big priced horses, but the reality is that they just don't win at a higher percentage than the favorites do in terms of finding that, you know, middle ground of 10 to 1 and above. You can maybe get those 5-to-1s, 4-to-1s, second choice or third choices, but favorites are winning almost 40% of the time. So your ability to fade them effectively and go in a different direction is going to have to be carefully crafted to be successful.
And obviously, I know NYRA does this. I'm not really sure about many other tracks, but with the CAWs, we closed, you know, the wind pools, et cetera, stuff like that. And it allows us to not have these crazy price drops as best as we can. And it's just been such a nice thing to see when I see everyone else on, you know, good old Twitter complaining about horses dropping. And listen, it's still bad no matter what racetrack we're at. But it's nice to see that we can see a track like NYRA take, you know, not advantage, but just take that step to really take care of the gambler in the best way that they can.
It's just nice to have that initiative to know a couple minutes before the race what price you're going to get on this horse so you can detail your wagers accordingly. If you're not getting the sort of price that you imagined you would have or that you wanted to bet the horse at, you don't have to wager. And if you're getting a much better price than maybe you imagined you would, maybe you wager a little bit more. And I think that we're providing a more realistic example of what those prices will be when those horses cross the wire than really any other racetrack has been able to do. And it's just because of the CAW money.
Now, for me, I had done some work over at Monmouth Park a couple of years ago, working in fixed odds pools and helping them run that kind of, you know, checking the odds, making sure everything was working out fine. Do you feel that for yourself, because we've been in such a parimutuel game for so long, that you would have a hard time transferring over to a fixed odds? Or I feel like for someone like me, who's, you know, been dabbling in the sports betting now more and more and having those fixed odds, it's just nice to know that when I bet the Yankees and the Mets and I get a price, it's not going to cave in the bottom of the ninth when all of a sudden I see I'm not going to make, you know, $15 or $20. I'm only going to make $6 or $7. Like that's the best way I can describe the gut punch it feels like when I see these odds drop.
I think there's pros and cons to both. I think depending on my opinion, I might want to set price on something that I think other people might start picking up on or might see throughout the day. As far as a rider doing very well at being in the zone or a morning line price that was a little bit too high at another racetrack. But as far as having that variability and having that fluctuation, I like it. And I think that's why horse racing is so spectacular in the odds that it offers, because you do get that live money coming in and you do get to see that variation. And sometimes you get a better price than you thought you would.
You've been at NYRA for quite a while now. Is there something that you're doing now, or just in a way where you kind of thought, you know, oh, I'll never, you know, be betting these type of horses, but now that you keep watching the tracks so much and it's kind of like the main focus for you, is there a specific rider or trainer or someone that you've just been like, I keep ending up on these horses and it wasn't something I felt like I was doing 2 or 3 years ago?
The problem is that the horses I keep ending up on are the horses that I like as my own personal pets, yeah. Basically. Or just the horses that they've run well in several of their starts at big prices and they keep hitting the board, but they're not quite winning. And then I see them in a race and I was like, well, don't pick them right away. Go through the race and make sure that this is actually a horse that has a chance to win in this spot. So I get caught in this trap myself of really wanting to gravitate to those horses that I have a little bit of an affinity for. And it's for valid reasons, but at the same time, it's good to still open the mind and be a little bit more willing to dissect the actual race that they're in, not just, oh, I know them, I'm going to pick them.
I've always felt, and I've asked people to do this as like a test for them for a month, pick a track, one track, focus on it for a month, see how much quicker your handicapping gets week in, week out, when you finally realize that you can find trends of, you know, trainers or jockeys, et cetera, just certain horses that maybe you'll see run, you know, I know it's only a month, so you might see them run back one time. Do you feel like your handicapping has gotten quicker, which allows you to kind of spend more time on the wagering end of the spectrum when it comes to NYRA?
I think you can definitely get to know a lot of these horses really well and understand their running style and what sort of capability they have, and also just the fluctuations in their form, whether they're heating up, whether they're cooling off. I think that that's something that you really get to notice and see those trends work out before your eyes when you're handicapping a track every day, basically. And I think that that's a good angle to be well aware of those barns that are doing really well and that do have that streakiness to them, and being able to observe where those trends are going, it can help you capitalize on some of those forces that might slip through the cracks of players that just aren't watching every single day.
I think at least for people who, maybe if you're not watching every day, or maybe you had work that day and you missed, you know, part of the card, going through the result charts, just something that for me, I just found almost like a rite of passage every night. Like I always knew, you know, from 9 to 10 or whatever, after, you know, homework or, you know, whatever I had to do that day, from 9 to 10, that was my time to look through result charts and really chart stuff out and then be able to attack cards when I was more of, I would say, a weekend warrior than I was playing, you know, every day. I think now I've kind of found that sweet spot where I'm trying to play like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, maybe some Sundays, but I'm really down to, you know, not every day as much as I can, because I'm just, A, I'm just too busy, and B, there's just, you know, not too much racing, but I'll usually just pick a sequence. Like it'll be early pick five or late pick five. And maybe not to play a pick five sequence, but just, you know, keep my mind fresh on the horses. Do you kind of feel, when you're looking through the card, are you narrowing in on specific races, or are you narrowing in on like, you know, the sequences specifically?
It all depends. I mean, I try to let the card tell me what I want to play, and mm-hmm. Each one is a little bit different. And I try to go with what is being offered to me and how I can formulate my opinions best within either a sequence or just throughout the day in terms of the wagers, like to win or an exactor or something. And it really all just depends. I like having that variability to each card. And I think that, you know, what you're saying is that you have a work-life balance. And I really respect that a lot, because I think that that's something we could all work on. And when you come into this, at least a little bit fresh, it keeps it a little bit more entertaining, a little bit more exciting for you to be able to go back and handicap the races. Like if I don't look at a race card for a couple of days, I feel like something's missing in my life. And then I'm excited to go do it again, you know?
I will say this though, because I have taken that time, like especially, I always read, like, it was in a Dave Litfin book from years ago. He always said the first week back from Belmont, if there was, let's say there's 8 races a day or 10 races a day, he would play like 6 total for the week, because he was just so burned out from Saratoga. And I've always felt that way about early in Belmont. I will strictly go down to, you know, almost weekend warrior, or I will only play like, you know, 1 card a week. And I, for some reason, just do very, very well coming off of the Saratoga, you know, long stretch, taking that small freshening, as they say in the racing business, and just coming in and playing, you know, smaller ideas like that. And I just wonder if it is just such a mental load from how, you know, listen, Saratoga is one of the best meets in the country. And I think that for how much money goes through, you know, that you're trying to find and make value on, you know, there's certain stop gaps I have in my year now as being a horse player, just a podcaster in general.
I think there's just something to be said for thinking too much. And Saratoga makes you do that because there's so many horses coming in from out of town. There's so much going on with trainer intentions because everybody wants to win at Saratoga. So they're willing to take more aggressive class drops and really put their horses in these spots where they might seem like they overlay the field, but do they really? And it's so competitive at every level. And I think that you end up having to up your handicapping a little bit and consider a lot more. And when you get back to sort of the basics of whatever it is that you're doing and however your process goes, sometimes then you're like, okay, I know how to do this. I don't have to think that much about it. It's okay.
I can't agree with you more there. Let's jump into the first of our three races. Sarah, we're going to talk about race number six from Aqueduct. We're going 7 furlongs on the dirt. It is the grade 3 distaff. 5 horses make the gate. We have 1 scratch from Royal Poppy. And this is a race when looking through, I was interested in the board. It's very rare in a 5-horse field, I think, that you see the 2 longer shots and, you know, pretty much almost 3 horses at 5-2 or less. And I kept trying to jump off Hot Fudge, and I'm like, let me try and find something else that's a little bit more interesting. And this one just likes to win, and usually when they're winning, they don't stop winning. And yes, the buyers, you know, aren't as fast as, you know, Ain't Broke's 91. But I just think this one reminds me of a horse that's, you know, maybe not as fast, but always when the horse rears up next to it, always tends to get the nose down first. And I like that fighting spirit that this one has. So for me, it was Hot Fudge on top. Any thoughts in this one, Sarah?
Yeah, I went to her as well, and picking chalk always doesn't sit right with me, but I've just been so impressed with her tenacity and her flexibility, because she had been successful at a variety of different distances, wet track, dry track, stakes company or not, even running well on the turf in a couple of starts too. And what I like about her is her running style can be so adaptable, and she's been able to sit just off the pace. She's been able to be the one setting those early fractions. And even in her last race, the correction where she was able to get her nose down just ahead of Can't Hurry Love, the connections of Can't Hurry Love decided to put her ahead of Hot Fudge. And I think that was a great decision to make strategically, but even that didn't work out. Hot Fudge was still able to just run her down. So I had been impressed with the run of races that she'd been able to put together. And I just thought that she was going to continue on that hot streak that she had.
Well, let's talk about the other 2 shorter prices, Ain't Broke and also Fingal's Cave. I'll just kind of give my thoughts real quick. I thought with Ain't Broke, and it's something that you can see, you know, first off, it's Linda Rice again as the trainer. And if you look through the last couple of Love's Allowance fields and did not do good in the Interborough. And yes, it was on the, in the mud. Now we're getting a fast track today. But there's just always that, you know, example in a handicapping book where a horse will do good with allowance company. And as soon as they step up to that very next level, you know, listen, it's not a listed stake. It's a graded stake now, but they just can't get it done. And this one already had lost as a favorite in that type of race. I didn't want to go back to that one and just see if, like, oh, maybe this time will be the time. And now it's more of a guessing game than it is a strong feeling. And for me, Fingal's Cave is one that, for David Donk, I just thought, you know, had been racing, you know, second off of a long layoff, comes back, runs in the Bay Ridge, you know, wins the race. I would imagine you wouldn't want to put a horse back in the barn for 4 months, or give or take, after they win a race off of, you know, very, very long layoff. So for this one, I just wonder if this one kind of just doesn't have it all together. If this one beats me this time out, fantastic. But I think there was enough holes, and I just thought Hot Fudge, and listen, this one goes off as the favorite. But I thought the 2 behind were just not the most interesting, and I thought maybe we were getting a touch of value here on Hot Fudge here at above even money.
Yeah, with Ain't Broke, I mean, she's clearly talented, but I think that's a good point that you bring up about taking that step forward in terms of class and whether or not she could really compete as effectively. And some disagree with me, and it's totally possible that this is very trivial and doesn't matter at all, but I think she does like going a little bit further as well. She can certainly handle the 7 for long distance, but her better numbers in the Linda Rice barn have been at that mile, and I think that she might like getting a little bit more ground to work with as well. And then looking at Fingal's Cave, this is a horse that is really good. I mean, her race when she was second, when she was defeated for the first time by Wicked Halo in the Raven Run, she had a terrible trip in that race and still managed to get up for second at Keeneland, which is a track that is very kind to speed. And when she came back in the Bay Ridge off of that long layoff, it was really exciting to see her back and see her put in a winning performance. But it wasn't a particularly fast race. And so I think that going forwards, you had to at least be a little bit concerned whether or not she was going to take that next step up in terms of the numbers that she had run or get back to some of the ones that she had been capable of previously in her career.
For me and Sarah, we're going to go with Hot Fudge here in the sixth to get the stake win. Let's see if we are correct right now.
And they're off. Fingal's Cave broke with speed, so did Apple Picker down towards the inside. It's a moderate tempo early as Hot Fudge wants to push the tempo. Here comes Hot Fudge and Kendra Carmouche in between horses, now going to be at the rail. Hot Fudge and Fingal's Cave, they're 1-2. Sheeta Booty's going to settle off of them, is now tracking from third. Just off of them is going to be Apple Picker, who's going to be in fourth in the trailer. Is Ain't Broke. A two-way battle for the front. It's Hot Fudge and a tight hold here on Fingal's Cave. To the outside, they're a clear 1-2, and they went 23.57 for the opening quarter mile. Sheeta Booty got over to the rail, is now a ground-saving trip in third with Ain't Broke. Under a tight hold is tugging at Eric Cancel, wants to go from fourth. The trailer is Apple Picker. They work into the far turn in the distaff. Hot Fudge has got the lead. Fingal's Cave is ready to pursue, and here comes Ain't Broke. Three wide. Ain't Broke is making a big move here. Three wide coming after the leaders now. Sheeta Booty is under a drive here in fourth, is at the rail. The trailer continues to be Apple Picker. Up front, it's Hot Fudge still holding him off. In between horses, Fingal's Cave. Ain't Broke has got that wide run here as they reach the top of the stretch, and now Ain't Broke kicks for home. Right there still is Fingal's Cave battling on down towards the inside. It's Hot Fudge trying to catch them all as Sheeta Booty down the grandstand side. It's Ain't Broke who's in front. Ain't Broke's going to have to hold off the charge of Sheeta Booty on the grandstand side. Ain't Broke and Sheeta Booty catching with every stride. Here's Sheeta Booty to the outside of Ain't Broke. They're 1-2. Sheeta Booty in the late stages. Sheeta Booty wins the distaff. Sheeta Booty over Ain't Broke.
And it is Shibuti getting the job done. 88, the winning buyer. Looking at a nice price of $19 on the Wind Mutual. And let me tell you, Sarah, when I went back and looked through this race, I just kind of was like, well, damn. I guess there is a couple holes in Hot Fudge as well. And if you look at Shibuti, the only reason I think this horse, listen, maybe they're not as fast as we need them to be, but, I mean, this one had won three times and had two board hits and then was coming off of a long layoff from July. But you get Chad, who's, again, pretty decent off long layoffs, and 3-for-3 at Aqueduct in the money with two wins. I think this one at 8-to-1, if you can poke holes in other horses and, you know, if you don't want to just single Hot Fudge in a 5-horse field, I think this one made a heck of a lot of sense at 8-to-1.
Absolutely, and this was a great pick by David Aragona, actually. He liked this horse quite a bit, but when you look back at her races and the level of company that she had faced as a three-year-old, and then you think, okay, is she going to take that natural progression, that step forward in terms of her numbers as she gets another year older and becomes more mature? It's certainly plausible to think that she'd be capable of doing so, especially with a barn like this. And I actually really liked the cutback for her in distance, coming back to 7 furlongs after trying those races going quite a bit further, because she's one of those horses that seem to want a little bit of pace to close into. And it was a great ride by Dylan Davis to save ground when he could in the early stages of this race, because the rail was very strong on Saturday. And so she was at least able to be on the good part of the racetrack for a little bit of time before angling out into the clear and running down some horses that, honestly, Hot Fudge's run of races that she had put together was so impressive that you have to be at least a little bit disappointed that she faded so badly in there after what was a fairly reasonable pace for her.
It's strange, right? Did she run so bad that you just think that now, you know, she's over the top and now we're just not going to get another good start from this one? I'm willing to give Hot Fudge more of a chance, although like another horse like Fingal's Cave kind of ran exactly how I thought. Third, didn't improve that much. Second off of a long layoff. Maybe third time back, this one will get even better. But I just thought that overall, obviously both wrong on Hot Fudge, but I just think Ain't Broke, the same idea. Is this one always going to find one that's just going to be good enough? And listen, this one had better figures than Shibuti, and Shibuti still gets the job done over this one. I'm really interested to see if Ain't Broke keeps ending up in these, you know, listed stake, you know, lower level graded stake races and just keeps finding one over and over again at these short prices. Might be a vulnerable fave going forward.
And I think it'll be interesting to see if that is the horse that sort of takes up this spot in this barn after Hot Fudge's performance, because if something went awry with Hot Fudge, she's not going to come right back in these types of races, and Ain't Broke could be the horse that sort of takes that role. But it'll be interesting to see what Linda does with both of these horses going forward. Sometimes a horse will run a race that has you scratching your head a little bit, but then they'll show up a week or two later and run very well. So it all depends on whether or not something minor was awry or she just didn't run her race that day. But looking forward to seeing what we get from her next time.
What's the one in the next race? Race number 9 from Aqueduct. We're going to go 7 furlongs on the dirt in the Bayshore. I think in this race overall, I just looking through, I didn't want Maxis Meredith coming off 2 back-to-back races in the mud. If the 84 is good enough in the Gotham, let's just see if they can do this one on a fast track. There was not much else in this race. Proprietary Trade off that slow-paced race is a horse that I think everyone jumps on because of the buyer speed figure. But I like to, you know, downgrade those horses off slow-paced races. I thought Eliminate, another one again coming out of the Gotham, but the 76 last time out in the mud going 6.5 on a fast track with Dylan Davis aboard did go off as a favorite. I just wondered if this one, you know, for Todd, they tried him in the Gotham, didn't run well. Now you kind of get this one back in the right type of spot, runs into a horse also coming out of the Gotham, which I guess is kind of unfortunate. But I just wondered, you look through the rest of the field, you know, Classic Joke is on the improve for Richard Stillman. But I wanted the other one coming out of the Gotham. I just thought we were getting a better price. And I just didn't want the two chalks in this as well.
Which is completely fair. I mean, I think that you want those horses that are at least a little bit more seasoned than the horses that were just coming off those maiden wins. Gaudy buyer speed figure, not like Proprietary Trade. And I went to a horse that did have some stakes experience as well. I actually like Mission Beach quite a bit in this spot, who honestly his hopeful where he was up and on the pace and completely fell apart where he finished fifth was one of his better races to me, because he could have thrown in the towel much sooner and much more dramatically than he did in that spot. And then you can't blame any horse for trying to face horses like Nisos and Stronghold that are just better than this group of horses that he was going to be facing. I liked that when he switched to the Brittany Russell barn, he was able to rate effectively and demonstrate that he could come from off the pace if necessary. And then the Withers, it was just a track that really liked to favor horses that were up close or saving ground towards the inside. He didn't do any of those things. Tougher company, longer distance. Thought there were enough excuses for him that he might run a little bit better in this spot.
I think as well for your choice, and this is something that we always hear about a lot of speed favoring tracks. This one seems to, obviously under the Bob Baffert barns, had a little bit more speed. Now in the last couple, it seems to be more coming from the back of the pack. And when you're betting closers, you're just not going to hit as many races, and you have to find the right price. So the fact that you have a horse here at 8-1 that you have some excuses for that you think can improve again in a race where, as we had said, you know, we have a horse that had in Maxis Meredith is the favorite, who was, you know, ran a 73 in the mud going 6.5. But I mean, if he downgrade that Gotham race and this one comes right back as a sprinter running these 70s, that's not scary. Proprietary Trade, if it gets a slow pace, is going to run that same type of number as an 85. I just didn't see that happening either. I think that finding horses, you know, it's not about finding the fastest buyer. It's about finding the grouping of buyers that you think can get the job done. And I think that you got a good idea here with Mission Beach being the choice for Sarah. I tried to get a little bit spicy on the outside with Eliminate. Let's see who gets it done in the 9th right now.
And they're off. Classic Joke broke with early speed, so did Shady whirl towards the outside, and Maximus Meridius is going to take back there to third. Moving forward is Proprietary Trade, is bringing Ridgewood Runner with that rival. Those are the front five. They're two in front of Yo-Yo Candy, who's well settled in six. Further back in the field comes Reasoned Analysis, is there with Mission Beach towards the tail end. Augustine Red, the early trailer, Eliminate, losing touch with the field early, is about 10 lengths the trailer. They're chasing Classic Joke. It's Classic Joke who's right there. Shady World up alongside those two head-and-head. perfect stalking position here for Maximus Meridius. With four furlongs left to go, they went 22-3 for that opening quarter mile. Three across the racetrack in behind them. That's Proprietary Trade. Yo-Yo Candy is moving through at the rail, is in fifth. Will need somewhere to go as they are tightly bunched on the front end from the back. Mission Beach is rallying on. Reasoned Analysis starts to get going. Augustine Red, Ridgewood Runner. Maximus Meridius has taken the lead. 46.36 for the half mile time. They've got a quarter mile left to go, and they've got to catch Maximus Meridius out in the center of the racetrack, who kicks away, is up by three. It's Maximus Meridius approaching a final furlong. Here comes the run from Proprietary Trade. Also the run from Reason Analysis, and Reason Analysis unleashed up on the outside. Maximus Meridius approaches the 16th, but every stride is Reasoned Analysis to push on by. It's Reasoned Analysis to pull off the upset. Reasoned Analysis over Maximus Meridius, then came.
And it is Reasoned Analysis getting the job done. 83 the winning buyer, $33 the winning mutual. It sucks when you kind of, you know, you go against the favorites and you just find the wrong long shot. This one being 15-1. Limited races, only the fourth lifetime start. Give me kind of your thoughts on the winner here, Sarah.
I mean, I think his performance was even more impressive because at no point during the race did this horse save any ground. He did not see the rail throughout the entire running of this race and was caught wide pretty much at every point of call. And so I think that his performance, maybe you want to even upgrade it a little bit based on him having to be somewhat against the racetrack in this spot. And he ran very well. That was a nice closing kick that he was able to produce. It's not as though the pace fell apart with Maximus Meridius up close and able to hold on for second in this race. And I feel as though he's just a horse that took a big step forward going from that 73 to the 83 buyer that he earned in here. And he did it at the right time with the slight cutback in distance. But he's definitely not one that I would have come up with, even though we, of course, always talk about the other Chad.
Well, let's talk about the other Chad. And let's talk, I'm going to ask a mutual friend of ours, Matthew DeSantis. Matthew, when you bring out the good old whiteboard, can you just give me the numbers for other Chad over the last 6 months and see how disgusting this ROI must be? Because how many times have I done races on this podcast where I literally just title like the race, you know, ideology of just other Chad? And it's just like, you would think after a while I would start to do that. Listen, Proprietary Trade didn't even hit the board here. We get this other one. You said off of a slight cutback. And it just makes sense. And listen, Chad obviously has many, many ownerships. He's going to have many horses in a lot of races. You're almost at the point where you have to give extra long looks at these long shots. Listen, this guy went off at 17-1 on debut. Didn't run that well. Didn't run well in the second start. Now they come off the layoff. Small turn back to a mile. And this one gets the W. And now they cut back, you know, again to seven. This one to me just feels like a lot of times if you can narrow down horses' distances and stuff where you're going to get the expert, you know, maybe not the top level, but this one seems like a 7 furlong to a mile or for sure in this race. Maximus Meridius on the cutback does not improve. Literally runs that 73 to 72 buyer with a 76. No one else really runs well. Eliminate, Mission Beach, second and third, or third and fourth. But just really, really nice job by Reasoned Analysis. I kind of tend to think that this field's going to come back a little bit soft in the Bayshore, and it's not a race that I'm going to be looking forward to betting anyone outside of this race.
I hear you on that. I think that the winner was really impressive in what he did, but hadn't really shown the signs of being able to do something like that, at least to me, prior to this race. And then everybody else behind him just kind of ran their race.
Agree with you on that. Let's move on to the last race. Race number 10 from Aqueduct, the race that everyone wants to talk about. The Wood Memorial, mile and an eighth on the dirt. I'll be really quick with this. I liked El Grande O a bunch in this race. Unfortunately, we get the scratch out. That left me with a bunch of just, you know, horses I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Tuscan Sky has been in too many wet track races. I'm not going to bet a horse like that. That left me with Resilience, who is, again, also coming off of a wet track race, but I just like seeing the improvement. 57, 76, 79, 80, and it's Belmont. I just feel like if you listen to people and you read the form well enough, there's only so many times you can see certain trainers that have the same type of, you know, four or five race sequence with young horses and know that maybe we're not going to get the big jump forward, but we're at least going to get some type of race here where this one won't discourage itself. And for me, I thought Resilience was the one. Deterministic, listen, Christophe Clement, I'm the biggest Christophe Clement homer there is. They were all coming off wet track races, it seemed, in this one. I just wanted to go a separate way than the horse that had just won the Gotham. Obviously, if they win the Gotham, they usually end up in the wood. It's kind of just, you know, the way of the land. So Deterministic doesn't technically have to, you know, win this race as long as he runs well enough. I really liked Resilience in this spot.
Nice. I fell for Deterministic a little bit. I was just really impressed with how he came off the layoff so professionally and had really taken that step forward, not only in maturity, which he already was very mature with the way that he broke his maiden at Saratoga, but in terms of the number that he was able to run and be able to come up the inside of other horses and defeat Just a Touch, who I think is a pretty nice horse himself. And there was just a lot of hype around this horse and thinking that he could be that first Kentucky Derby starter for the Clement Stables, and he still could be, but he just really is one that kind of fooled me into thinking that he had that class edge on this group. But I did go with Resilience second. Progressively improving buyer speed figures is one of my absolute favorite angles to look at, and he had this to a T. And he was also coming out of a race that we've seen horses graduate from and do well, or at least we knew going in that these were horses that had some ability in the Risen Star, Sierra Leone, Track Phantom, Catching Freedom. He ran well enough in that spot, posting his career best at that time of an 85 buyer speed figure, and showed that he could handle a wet track as well as the distance. So I was really looking forward to what we were going to get from both of those two horses. And I also like the workouts of Resilience coming in.
Deterministic top pick for Sarah, but did have Resilience second. I decided to go with Resilience on top. Let's see who gets the points and the win in the Wood Memorial right now.
And they're off, and Uncle Heavy off a step slow. Resilience right out to the front. Lonesome Boy is in that early mix, and there's Evening News. Evening News and Eric Cancel will push the tempo. Resilience is going to take back. Just had to check briefly there in second. Outside of that one comes Lonesome Boy. Then comes Deterministic, who settled into fourth, is to the inside of Society Man, who's now a shared fourth. They share that fourth and fifth position. A little rank early was Merit, who's to the outside of Gettysburg Addresses in the lime green silks, light blue silks there with Deposition out wider. Tuscan Sky is towards the tail end. Uncle Heavy is at the back end of the field there with Protective and the trailer Elysian Meadows. They work up the backstretch. Evening News has got the lead. Pressure here from Lonesome Boy. The two long shots went 23.45 for the opening quarter mile. Resilience is settling off of them, is now patiently ridden by John Velasquez from third. Then behind them at the rail is Deterministic, still sharing that spot with Society Man. Deposition with an early move. Deposition has now taken sixth. In behind that is Merritt in seventh with less than a half mile to go. They went 47.49 for a half mile time. They've got to catch the big long shots. Evening News and Lonesome Boy, who's under a drive. Here comes Resilience moving in closer. Deterministic will need somewhere to go. Deposition is in the hunt. Society Man, Orange Cap is splitting rivals. Uncle Heavy, Tuscan Sky, Protective from the back of the field. They're all making a charge for the lead. Lonesome Boy will have the lead here with Resilience, and now Resilience presses on, and Resilience is quickly up by two, three widening lengths. Society Man is in the clear. Oh, we had a spill there. Deposition clipped heels and went down. It was Resilience who's opening up, is up by two and a half, three lengths. Society Man down towards the inside. Protective, Resilience is drifting out. It's Resilience who's clear, is up by three lengths now. Resilience will win.
And it is Resilience that gets the job done. 90 the winning buyer, $11 the winning mutual, $54 second place Society Man, the 11. Just a race where if you look overall at it, we have 106-1, 38-1, 80-1, Resilience on top. Tuscan Sky to me is just the type of horse that just above or just below 3-1 that a lot of these horses had wet track form and was going to be on a dry track. And for that, it's not about tossing the wet races out. You just kind of have to find the right odds that fit for you here. Resilience was kind of that perfect horse for me in a way that he was still taking a little bit of money from as a choice. He ended up going off at third choice. And if the other two just don't run back well to good form, this one's going to pay a nice $11 mutual, ends up doing that. With the fact that we have all these others coming underneath, like, Society Man, I don't know what the Derby stat points look like right now, but I mean the fact that you have a 106-1 shot now that could be possibly in the gate for the Derby is just absolutely mind blowing to me.
And I think his connections are definitely leaning towards making that decision to go. They were extremely excited to see him get that huge upset second in this race. And a horse that showed he had some ability, but he had also run in graded stakes as a maiden and then finally got the win of his own on March 9th. And it seemed like quite the long shot that he was coming into this spot. But if you had me guess which horse of Danny Gargan's was going to garner more Derby points on Saturday, he's probably not the one that I would have gone with. And of course, I think it's just important to mention that there was an incident in this race, but all reports coming out after the race and the following day seem to say that Dexter Haddock and Deposition were both okay. Good. So always good to hear as well.
And I know that there was a little bit of chat on Twitter about this and how people, you know, listen, nobody likes when accidents happen on the racetrack. Everyone asks me, like, if you've seen one, you just kind of become numb to it. And I say, no, it just opens up a Band-Aid every single time I see it. And now it brings up talk of, you know, oh, we should let the replay go because it is a points race and all of that. Do you have any thoughts you can absolutely say if we the fifth and don't want to talk about? But I'm just curious on your thoughts as being someone who watches a lot of races. Do you think that these type of races need to have the replays up, or are you fine with them being down?
I think that, you know, like whatever decisions end up being made, I can understand the viewpoint in both cases, making the argument for wanting to have access to that video file to look at the other horses and going forward to their next starts, but also not wanting to ever have to see something like that again, even as a horse racing fan or someone who is looking for there to be some sort of problem and really using that against the industry mm-hmm. in a way. And I can understand not wanting to really appease either side, but as far as this particular situation, when you know after the next day that everybody's okay, yep. I think that it's important to be able to see at least a cut version of the race, which is what we were able to provide, mm-hmm. where you do see the majority of the race and we have a small ISO file on the winner and you don't have to watch the incident because it didn't really affect the outcome of the race.
Correct.
However, there are some races that I will never, ever watch again, even if I could. Mm-hmm. So I understand both sides of it. It's a tough place to be in. I think that ultimately it's up to you what works best for you, but I can understand why certain entities do not want that out there.
Another quick thought on the winner before I let you go, Sarah, just adding blinkers on. And I think not that it's at the late part of the game, but obviously this one is going to go into the Derby now. Now we have blinkers on. I would almost wonder if they're going to wait for the draw to figure out if they're going to go blinkers on still or not. Usually a lot of people like to see blinkers on because it'll show speed. I am now one, I think, in later years that I want to see blinkers off as more of a way that they fix the problem. But I wonder now with this win if they're just going to keep the blinkers on because this one just seemed so good going down the lane.
He did. And I mean, he was able to rate pretty comfortably while not sitting too far off the pace. So I'm always of the mindset, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But it'll be interesting to see what they ultimately do going forwards and sort of what their plan is tactically. And it's just nice to know that you have a horse that can handle a route of ground without needing to be on the lead.
I think this is going to be one of the horses that I will find most interesting come that first Saturday in May. But with that, I do want to thank my special guest, Sarah Ibalwi, for coming on this week's edition of Red Bull Rewind. Sarah, what do you have going on over at NYRA this week?
A lot. We are picking up in terms of our showtime that we have available with having the full shows again on Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays. Acacia's back from Florida. We've got on-site coverage at Oaklawn through the remainder of their meet. So lots of people in different places to bring you all the racing action.
Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Of course.
I do want to thank everyone who listens to this podcast and the rest of the podcast on the Money Media Network. Also want to thank my special guest, Sarah Ibalwi, for coming on, talking all thing NYRA with myself. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Peter Thomas Pornatal. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Cotney. I'm Spencer Lugenbuehl. We will see you next time.